The Guardian.
Hello, I'm Alexis Petridis. This is Music Weekly. This week, we hear from Scottish three-piece Lau, who have teamed up with Cream's Jack Bruce for a special collaboration at the Celtic Connections Folk Festival this week. And the Mark Lanegan Band, Grimes and Rotifer are all up for discussion with our guests this week. That's what's coming up in this week's Music Weekly from The Guardian. Hello once more. In the studio this week for Pod Fun, it says here, is writer Dorian Linsky. Hi, Dorian.
Hello.
Hello. And the guide's Rebecca Nicholson. Hello.
Hi.
How you doing?
All right.
It's been a thrilling morning, hasn't it?
It's been thrilling, yeah. Are we allowed to talk about that?
We can't talk about the result.
Right.
But we have been discussing The Guardian's debut album of the year.
Award.
There's not really much more to say. I was just going to say, there was the amazing moment when Nicky Wire finally blew a gasket and called James Blake a during the thing.
Really?
Yeah. I had some sort of anti-Welsh sentiment or something he'd managed to detect in the
but no, it was a great moment.
It was fantastic.
If only that had been captured.
I thought that was actually a remarkably restrained performance from Nick this morning.
It was civil.
Thoughtful. He notes like that. He listened to everything, pages and pages of notes.
Wow. We
will begin this week by going around the table to each play our new favourite track. We're going to start with Dorian's choice. That's Ode to Sad Disco. Dorian, you brought this in.
Yeah, I've been listening to a lot of Mark Lanegan's back catalogue. I've been doing, like, I reviewed this album for Q and I'm also doing, like, a how to buy kind of thing. And it seems I had this sort of theory that he was kind of had this career that sort of Kurt Cobain might have had, you know, had success and shooting himself, not got in the way. But it's this kind of, you know, Mark Lanegan's first solo album. He did a cover of Where Did You Sleep Last Night with Kurt Cobain.
Ah.
And it kind of invents the sound of Unplugged, that bit where sort of grunge meets roots music kind of thing. And then he kind of continued to pursue that. And throughout his whole career, whoever he works with, and he works with tons of people, whether it's like Uncle or Queens of the Stone Age or whatever, there's this particular kind of, these themes recur, this particular vision of sort of American music. It's kind of like a, you know, alt Johnny Cash kind of
figure. Exactly, yeah.
And I'm used to liking Mark Lanegan records. I generally like pretty much everything. But what was so amazing about this was that the kind of music that he was into but that kind of he didn't tell anyone about. You know, there's an interview in The Quietus where he talks about how he really loves his ringtone is Subculture by New Order.
Yeah.
And he really loves loads of, you know, loves Roxy music and the Bee Gees.
Yeah, what a man of exquisite taste.
Exactly. And what's kind of even more amazing about this song is that I kind of looked up the production credits to see, like, well, who's he got in to remix this, to produce this? And it's just him and his regular collaborator, I think Alan Yannis. And it's just the most amazing, like, you could build a career on that because I'm used to hearing kind of the sort of electro house sound, but to have it with his voice and this kind of really sonorous voice and for it to work and not just sound completely embarrassing. I've played it more than I think any other song since I think I got a promo a couple of months ago. And I just think it's such a brilliant stroke of you know, he's 47 and normally when these kind of figureheads in American music get to a certain point, you're no longer surprised. You kind of know what these songwriters, you kind of know what Ronnie Prince Billy's up to, or Bill Callahan or whatever. And this just seems like the most incredible swerve.
No, I completely agree. I was astonished. You know, you get the album, it's called Blues Funeral. And you think, well, you know, not Here We Go Again in a bad way, because I do really like them. Bubblegum, the last Mark Lanegan Band album, was fantastic, genuinely brilliant record. But you kind of, as you say, you think you know where you stand with this guy. He's the scariest man in rock. I once saw him performing a
thing in America when he came on. Queens of the Stone Age were on. It's when they still had that fella with the beard that used to get his knob out on stage in the band. And Mark Lanegan kind of came on stage and sang, I think it's called The Hanging Tree. God almighty, it was like somebody just turned the heating off in the venue. It's just, you are just a terrifying kind of hunched, scary, growly kind of
figure. Well, I saw that lineup play Coachella in 2003, and you know, Coachella's got the mountains in the background, and because it's like a golf course, basically, it sort of feels detached from its surroundings. But there, it basically just seemed as if these weirdos had kind of climbed down from the mountain and have kind of like were sort of laying siege to the festival. And largely that was due to sort of Mark Lanegan's sinister presence, which when you in interviews, he seems quite charming, but he projects this kind of this sort of creeping dread.
What an amazing thing to be. I wish I could project a bit of creeping dread. Get people to do things more. You know what I mean? You projected a bit of creeping dread, don't you think that'd be good? Rebecca.
Yes. Well, like you, I loved Bubblegum. I thought that was a really outstanding record, but I hadn't heard the new one. So when I listened to this for the purposes of this podcast, I was greatly surprised. It was not what I was expecting. It's a fantastic song, and his voice works so well with it. I wouldn't have expected it at all.
It's so resonant. And as a kind of combination of these two things, of this kind of like sort of mythic kind of Cormac McCarthy Americana kind of thing with like whumping beats, you just think Primal Scream would get down on bended knee sobbing.
This is very true.
For a song this good these days.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I completely agree. Well, that's Ode to Sad Disco by the Mark Lanegan Band. It's off the album Blues Funeral, out on February the 6th, if you're intrigued. Hear the sound of Mark Lanegan putting a donk on it. The next track is my choice. Just how radical was this chic? Maybe my generation was written that week and before. Took 11 years to heed the call. Back in the smoke, thick and heavy dough. It must have been hours. Kids blow through flowers, seething under his beard. While the audience cheered and sneezed up, Schwitters left the symbolism to bid until the man. That's my choice. Rotifer and Ernst Jandl at the Albert Hall. Usual story, pile of records, listening to Marfis. This is an album by a guy I've never heard of Rotifer before. Apparently he is an Austrian journalist who also sort of moonlights as a songwriter, and his backing band, for those of a very indie persuasion, his backing band includes on guitar Darren Heyman of Hefner, which I didn't know, even though I know Darren a bit. And I just put this album on, and that song, it ain't reinventing the wheel, you know. It's rackety, indie, sort of garagey thing. It's beautifully produced by Reckless Eric, the new wave, sort of famous new wave star. And it's a beautifully kind of warm, distorted sound. And I just, that song really grabbed me. It's got kind of clever lyrics, you know. And if you only buy one rackety, indie, garage record about an Australian avant-garde poet performing at the Austrian. Sorry, that's Australian.
Yeah,
that'd be great, Australia. Well, not that you couldn't have an Australian avant-garde poet, but yeah, if you only buy one record about that, it should probably be this. It felt like summer had come for some reason when I put it on. It felt like there was a bit of spring in the air. I suppose it reminded me of things like the Television Personalities as well and stuff like that that I used to like when I was a ute. I'll throw this one open to the floor, Rebecca.
I didn't enjoy it very much, I'm afraid. I listened to it a few times and I couldn't think what it reminded me of, even though something was nagging at the back of my mind. And then it occurred to me that I was thinking of Ocean Colour Scene.
Whoa!
I know, I'm so sorry. Oh. I'm so sorry.
There were no survivors.
I didn't enjoy it.
No,
it just
cool.
made me think of those all those kind of slightly rubbish Britpop bands that happened around that time. Your
right.
face, if only you could see your face right now.
Oh, I'm taking about Dora. I'm not. That's
that's
I think you've said your piece. You've said your piece here, Dorian.
Well, I'm slightly affected by the fact that completely coincidentally, not having heard of Rotifer either. He actually retweeted me this morning.
Did he?
Yes. And I was like, oh, it's you. I've just heard your song. I mean, it's so nothing new.
Mm.
But it does kind of... It is in that kind of great lineage with... We were talking about Nicky Wire earlier. And, of course, there's a particular kind of indie that just predated the Manics, which people like McCarthy,
yeah.
which he found really inspirational because they were just... write songs about interesting things, which you know, it's not hard, I think. You know, if you've got like a decent sound and you've got a good tune, why not sing about an avant-garde Austrian poet at the Albert Hall? That seems like a brilliant thing to do. But very few people sort of would think to do that now. So in a way, it has that sort of throwback quality.
It's interesting that why do people not write? You know what I mean? As you say, it's not that difficult to find. Surely it's not that difficult to find interesting subjects to write songs about. Why does it seem peculiar that somebody's doing that? Why does it seem old-fashioned that somebody's doing that? It's a very, very good point.
It's kind of rarely done that you get. I think sometimes when you get the bookish indie bands now, their books are the ones that. You know, it's like, oh, you've read Bukowski, have you? You know, the Grapes of Wrath. You know, it's kind of, yeah, well, where's the surprise? Whereas, you know, much to my shame, Austria, I had to Google this guy.
So did I. I mean, I worked out from listening to the lyrics at the event. It was actually quite a very famous poetry event called, I can't remember what his name is, it was a spontaneous poet.
Was that
or
the
something.
One that Ginsberg was at?
Ginsberg was at. And he apparently was this guy. Yandel was sort of the surprise hit of the event because nobody had ever heard of him, and he came on and did this weird kind of almost like Kurt Schwitters sort of thing. I think he may have done some Kurt Schwitters stuff with Ginsberg on stage, and there was like pandemonium in the audience, blah blah. But from what I gather, there was pandemonium in the audience throughout because it's a big sort of countercultural event. One of the famous things about it is R.D. Lang, the anti-psychiatrist, decided it'd be a good idea to take a load of his patients along. So you had in the Royal Albert Hall, so I think a stage in the centre of the Royal Albert Hall with Ginsberg and Gregory Corso and people like that all declaiming away, with just loads of mad people running round and round the stage making a big fuss throughout. It was a sort of famous.
And that's what this song is about.
This is what this is the event this song is about.
I will soften my judgment ever so slightly.
You see, I think the reason why these songs are so valuable, put my Nicky Wire head on, is that I love songs that open a little door on something else, because a lot of the time that is how you discover certain books or movies or whatever. It's those literate bands that kind of turn you on to stuff. And now with the internet, that it seems like we'll do that more, because now instead of just sort of
it's easy to find.
Instead of just sort of sitting there thinking, how am I ever going to find out about this? You can go straight to it. And so you find, instantly you Google it, you find out about this poet, you find out about this event. Mm.
Spontaneous,
and suddenly, like, you know, it just makes the world seem more interesting.
No, so absolutely.
You know, when you find out, this morning I found out that Aldous Huxley was the first person outside Trinidad to write about Calypso.
Wow.
And it made me so happy, just this weird little collision of kind of pop music and literature.
It's
and
when you get things like that. I was reading a thing that apparently, I mean, everyone knows that Philip Larkin was a big jazz fan, but apparently Philip Larkin, on his own of an evening, would sort of just get a bit pissed on gin and tonic, then put jazz records on, and the description was, would then caper around the room, miming the drums as they went. And it's just a brilliant kind of unlikely, this kind of mopey librarian from Hull, just, you know.
And this is, people should be writing songs about this stuff.
Philip Larkin,
Calypso, drunk Philip Larkin.
Larkin listening to jazz. No, absolutely, I couldn't agree more. That track by Rotterfit is our forthcoming album. It's on Edwin Collins' new label, which I think is called AED, and the album is called The Hosting Couple. So if that whetted your appetite, that's where you can track it down. Last track, Rebecca's Choice. Was Grimes and Oblivion from the forthcoming album Visions, which I think is out in March. Rebecca.
Yes, this is my choice.
Yes, it is.
She is a Montreal musician. This album that's coming out is her third album, technically, but the first two were very much DIY. I think one was even a cassette.
Yeah.
And then the second one was kind of a very low-key thing. And this is coming out on 4AD. I just love the way this song starts as a kind of... It starts in quite a straightforward 80s synthy way, and then as it progresses, you just start to feel more and more bent out of shape and a little bit disturbed by it. I think it's fantastic.
I think it's very interesting. I was listening to this in conjunction with an album by another artist who is thought to work in a similar field, who shall remain nameless. And exactly that, I thought, you've taken this 80s, this other person just made a kind of 80s synth record, and fair enough, good songs and all that. But I was like, you've taken this and taken it somewhere kind of interesting and weird and slightly unsettling. And yeah, I really like it. I really like the whole album.
Well, I was watching a couple of interviews with her online in preparation for this, and she was saying that she's a big fan of Katy B and Nicki Minaj, which I don't think either of those things you would think to begin with, but perhaps it's that pop.
Aren't all right thinking people fans of Nicki Minaj now?
Well, I would hope so.
Yeah, I basically have been spending the week watching the Nicki Minaj video.
I haven't seen it. Is it good?
It's just one of the greatest things ever.
Wow.
Yeah. That has a similar effect. It's quite disturbing. By the end of it, you're like...
It's unbelievable. Yeah. It's Hype Williams.
Right.
But not just doing the old shtick.
Yeah.
It's just... It's like the biggest... I think it had like 4 million views in 24 hours. It like broke the record on Vevo.
Wow.
And it's kind of... It's like all that stuff with Lady Gaga, but with... You realise what Lady Gaga would be like if she had an actual sense of humour.
Yeah. Wow, that sounds brilliant.
It's mind-boggling. So Grimes is only human.
Mm. Let's talk about Grimes' music rather than her taste in music. Really, what did you make of this track, Dory?
Well, I didn't know about Grimes till Vanessa last year, which became one of those big kind of, you know, blogger picks that sort of went around. And I didn't actually pursue... You know, I didn't sort of dig deeper into her catalogue. I like finding these tunes and just enjoying them on their own for a bit before sort of finding out any more. And this is quite different to that, which is why I suppose when I heard the 80 synths, I didn't think, this is all you can do. I knew that there was other stuff. Mm. Initially, it starts off and I thought, this is kind of fairly standard. And then this amazing sound comes in about halfway through, an amazing sort of lower synth sound, which is just super evocative and reminds me a little bit of the new Chairlift record, where they've also gone full pop, which of course now, you know, the climate, chart climate being as it is, means they will never, they're not actual pop. They will never, ever get near the chart.
No, completely.
But it is kind of a real commitment to, you know, the kind of virtues of just weird, interesting pop. And I think the reason why you keep getting thrown back to the 80s is not necessarily because they're trying to be derivative, but because that was the heyday of weird, interesting electronic pop. I don't think there's any pastiche here. I just think that sort of suits her vision.
Yeah, I think I completely agree. It's like if you're going to be a sort of dark, moody guitar band, you're probably going to sound a bit like the Velvet Underground. Mm. You know what I mean? That's the sort of source of it. I agree. I thought it was a great track. Oblivion by Grimes. It's from the album Visions, which is out, we think, on March the 12th on 4AD Records. Celtic Connections is an annual festival at various venues around Glasgow, and it has strong roots in Celtic music, losing the title, but it's also known for its diversity and ambitious/risky collaborations. Even by Celtic Connection standards, however, pitching cream rock legend Jack Bruce with the virtuoso trio Lau, who are Aidan O'Rourke on fiddle, Martin Green on accordion, and Chris Drever on guitar and vocals, is a pretty bold step. They're three-time winners of Best Group at the BBC Folk Awards, and they met cream legend Jack Bruce on some TV documentary about him last year. They hit it off and decided to play a gig together, which has led up to this week's gig. Colin grabbed both Jack and Lau between soundchecks at the Old Fruit Market in Glasgow, and he spoke to Lau first.
How are you feeling about this gig with Jack Bruce?
Very excited. And yesterday's rehearsal, he actually rocked out for 8 hours.
You're kind of known anyway for kind of breaking a few boundaries in terms of folk music, but I mean, even this is... Are you out of your comfort zone here, Aidan?
Not at all. No, a wee bit, actually. We did a BBC documentary earlier last year with Jack, so we kind of hit it off, and he seems to like what we do with his songs, so it all seems pretty natural. And, you know, whereas the rehearsal floor was surrounded by page after page of notes from Martin and I, Chris didn't need any of them at all, having been a massive Jack Bruce.
Chris Drever, you're quite a big fan, aren't you, of Jack Bruce and Cream and that whole thing?
I am, yeah, absolutely. Some of the first music I owned before I played an instrument, even, and then I spent, you know, some of my formative years learning all those songs.
I mean, do you think that whole kind of old stereotypical idea about what folk music is, does that still hold true, Aidan?
Of what folk music is?
Yeah, you know, there's the old stereotypes about folk music, you know, the kind of finger in the ear and all that kind of stuff.
there's still people out there doing that. There's still people singing unaccompanied ballads. It'll always exist, and there's more people doing it now possibly than there ever was. So it's all good.
But I mean, Chris, you're obviously the singer in Lao. I mean, did that ever affect you? I mean, were you never privy to that idea about folk music is unfashionable?
Well, it's a strange thing to attach negativity to. I never really understood that, you know, and I never really felt it from anyone. You know, I am a folk musician. If somebody says, "What kind of music do you play?" I say, "I play folk music." You know, I've no problem with that. If anyone else does, then they're maybe a bit of a weirdo, to be honest.
It was definitely highly uncool to play the fiddle when I was young, and that's changed a lot. Maybe because there are more people doing it, maybe there's more access to more music and things like that, but I think there's more kids carrying accordions and fiddles around comfortably than there ever was.
Because folk music is cool now, is that right?
It's not really what I'm saying, but people understand it a lot more than they did back in the 70s and early 80s.
There's also the social aspect, which you don't see unless you actually go to an event where there's a lot of people playing music. If all you see is the end product on a stage, cold and hard and rehearsed, you know, it can be fantastic, but it can also be just a load of notes.
Returning briefly to Pigeon Island, I think it's a very open-minded scene, which is sometimes perceived as not being open-minded. I think that people think that a love of traditional things goes hand-in-hand with a conservatism, and I don't think that's true. I think people often ask us, do people not mind that you're messing around with traditional music? But no, they don't, because I don't think it's like that. I think that people on the whole, if they're interested in traditional music, are happy and confident enough in themselves and that music to have people do whatever they want to do.
But do Lao play much to kind of non-folk audience, non-specialist audiences that don't necessarily know much about the background and the history of it?
I think so, yeah. I think, especially over the last few years, there's more and more across the spectrum music lovers coming to see us. Yeah. I mean, there's definitely a hardcore folky audience that come and see us regularly, but it's definitely been expanding. We've noticed it.
In the bigger cities, especially, the further out we get to smaller places, especially, you know, islands, not so much, but then, you know, there are fewer people around. But in London, it's not very folky. The gigs now are not, you know, in terms of demographic, are not...
Yeah. Yeah. It's a load of people with high tops and skinny jeans hanging about. You know, there's quite a lot of that goes on.
And playing, I mean, you're playing with Jack Bruce, playing some of the old Cream hits, I believe it, Sunshine of Your Love and White Room and all that. I mean, do you have to adapt to do that? Is it a challenge, or does it come fairly naturally to play that sort of stuff?
It's fairly natural.
It's much more natural than we thought. It's quite surreal sitting. We sit in our little rehearsal room playing away to Cream. That's quite weird.
Also quite weird to the people who use the rehearsal space next door to us. What's happened to Lou? Maybe they have a wedding coming up.
In a white room with black curtains near the station. Black roof country, no gold payment.
Yeah, we were talking about the Celtic Connections that's had this reputation for kind of mixing seemingly unlikely bedfellows. I'm talking with Lau about that, who are playing this gig tonight with Jack Bruce, and I'm delighted to say I've managed to grab Jack Bruce for a quick word. Welcome, Jack.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
You've done so much, obviously, in your career. I mean, how do you view playing with Lau? Is this something a bit different?
Well, it's very different for me because, I mean, I've played with a lot of... great musicians and musicians from different kind of backgrounds and cultures and all of that, especially Latin musicians and so on. But it's the first time I've actually played with a bona fide kind of Scottish folk band. So yeah, that's the first.
And how are you finding it? How's it working out?
Oh, those guys are great. I mean, just all very intuitive. And I'm also working with a string quartet and a rock band and various other things, all which will all come together in the fullness of time, hopefully.
Yeah, I mean, it's strange you've not really embraced folk music before, you know, coming from up here.
Well, I think all of my music has been folk music. I would argue that, because I think we're all folk, you know, and I don't make distinctions. Certainly the influence that I've had from my background is very much that of a folk influence. And I think the blues is folk music. So I would not agree with that.
Okay.
It's just labels. But, you know, I think if you're talking about sort of traditional folk music with, you know, putting your hand over one ear, no, I haven't done that a lot. Although I've done a bit, having sung in the Glasgow Mod when I was a child.
Yeah, I was reading a lot about you. Yeah. You actually sang Gaelic, is that right?
I did, yeah, because I learned Gaelic at school.
Wow.
I was one of the few people at Bella Houston Academy who got to learn Gaelic, which I've now mostly forgotten, like French.
but you're obviously still busy. I mean, you're going on tour shortly.
Yeah, I'm doing next thing I'm doing is in Cuba. I'm playing with the big mambo band there, Augusto Enriquez and his mambo band. That's going to be fun in the Karl Marx Theatre on the 27th of February, I think it is. So come along if you happen to be there. And then after that, I'm touring in the UK.
And how do you feel about music these days? I mean, is it as exciting and as innovative as kind of, you know, when you started out?
Well, I think you have to work at that. You know, if I was just doing the same old, it wouldn't be at all. It would just be like a job. Mm. But I make sure that I don't do that. You know, if I'm going to play and sing, I want to be doing interesting things, which is why I do so many diverse things. I get bored very easily. But as far as the new music goes, I think there's a lot of great new music around.
Mm. You're still doing some of the old stuff, aren't you? You're playing Sunshine of Your Love and White Room with Lau?
Yeah, tonight we're playing, we're doing a version of that, yeah, which is, it sounds quite Braveheart-like. We've got Jim Sullivan with his big hairy drum. And it sounds, yeah, you're expecting some kind of invasion to happen at any moment when that starts. So I think it's quite good, yeah.
Yeah.
It's interesting because that song or that riff has been done by so many different people, but it has a entity all of its own. It doesn't matter. You can't do anything to it and spoil it. You know, it's like kind of da-da-da-da or something. It just is.
And what about recordings, Jack? What are you? You got anything on the horizon?
The next record that's coming out is with my American band called Spectrum Road, and the record is also called Spectrum Road, and that's May the 8th. It's due to come out, and that's a band with Vernon Reed, John Badeski, Cindy Blackman Santana, and myself. It's a kind of free jazz fusion group. The music was based on the music of Tony Williams, but then we're taking it a little further than that too.
And the voice is holding up pretty well, isn't it?
It's better, yeah, better than my two tracheostomies, yes. I think they must have done something at Addenbrooke's Hospital when I had those. I had that disease, Pseudomonas. It's really... I had that, but it didn't get me. Mm.
So obviously no thoughts of retirement, Jack.
Oh, well, who knows? I keep saying it, you know, and it doesn't seem to... Every time I say it, something else comes along, something very enticing, you know. I'm going to play one concert in Cuba, but I'm going there and everything's paid for and I get to stay for 10 days, so, you know, how bad is that?
Colin Irwin talking to Jack Bruce and Lau in Glasgow earlier this week. Celtic Connections continues until February the 5th, and you can find out more about the festival at CelticConnections.com. Before we leave you, a few comments from the blog. There was lots of discussion about last week's interviewees. Toy, our old favourite Dave Portivo, said, "You definitely got the sense from that interview that while they were creative guys who genuinely love making music, it does seem based on an intense passion for the past. I'd love to see someone say bollocks to Sonic Youth, Joy Division, Pavement and My Bloody Valentine." You know, I'd quite like to see that as well. Be good.
Good luck with that.
Yeah. That's not going to happen, is it? But, I mean, you know, maybe he would say It's Little Mix. I bet they say bollocks.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, yeah, people who are actually ignorant and have no interest in that would be the only ones free from it, because now all that information is so ubiquitous.
Yeah.
And it does... I don't know. I honestly think, I've been thinking about it a lot recently, and I think it's the problem that we can't get out of at the moment, is that everything seems, you know, obviously referential. Mm. And I think part of the problem actually is not just what the bands are doing, but it's the listeners are becoming like, when I first heard Jesus and Mary Chain, I didn't know all the stuff they were referencing.
No.
Some journalists did, but I didn't. But now, of course, the equivalent 15-year-old would be able to check all that out on Spotify.
Yeah.
So the kind of listeners' view of things is kind of warped, as well as the bands. And then you just end up, I think if you obsess over it, you end up going absolutely nuts about, there's nothing new.
I completely agree. I remember, you know, I probably may have told this story before. I remember, you know, when I was 15 or 14, it was actually quite hard. If you wanted to buy a Velvet Underground record, you had to go to London to get it. You know, I was sort of living near, not far from Watford.
And then you had to get on the horse and trap.
Yeah.
Go to that London, and they would give you a handcrafted shellac disc.
But no, I mean, music was a lot less accessible. In the 80s, lots of records, particularly in the 80s, lots of albums were deleted and unavailable. You couldn't get a Scott Walker solo album. Scott Walker solo albums were going for about 80 quid in the mid-80s. So, you know, there is definitely a point about the accessibility of music. Maybe it does change the way you listen to things. It's interesting. On the subject of Henry Rollins, who Jude said she was meeting last week, Nathan3E posted, "I heard the name Henry Rollins and waited for the dig." In this case, Michael Hann became the first person to declare that the Black Flag anthem Rise Above is sung with a lisp. "I knew Rollins a little shortly after Black Flag broke up. He stayed at my home on two separate occasions, and I can say without hesitation that he's a fantastic guy with a work ethic that any of us would do well to emulate." Whereas the James said, "The highlight last week was the 10-second aside in regards to Henry Rollins. Any chance you'd get him to co-host the podcast with Calvin Johnson? I'd pay to listen to it." We're always looking for new revenue streams here at The Guardian.
I'll get him and Calvin Harris.
Imagine that. That'd be brilliant. Him, Calvin Johnson and Calvin Harris. Just completely, three people completely bamboozled by each other. Loads of retweets too about Jude's choice of VCMG, which was the Vince Clarke and Martin Gore techno track. Your thoughts are welcome on this week's programme now, though. Of course, you can do that at guardian.co.uk/musicweekly or tweet your thoughts at musicweeklypod. That's nearly it for us this week, though. We're back next Friday. Don't forget to tweet us or leave a comment. Links are at guardian.co.uk/musicweekly. My thanks to Dorian. Thank you.
Cheers.
And to Rebecca.
Thanks.
I'm Alexis Petridis, and the programme was produced by Scott Cooley.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.